House Finance, please come to order. It's 2 o'clock on Friday, the 29th. We have members present, Representative Thompson, Representative Wilson, Stoltz, Representative Costello, Representative Guerra, Representative Holmes, and Representative Munoz. We have a quorum to do business. We're continuing the committee discussion on House Bill 4. I know the sponsors are anxious to get this on the floor. This is Good Friday. Now, there are resurrections to follow. So we have the bill before us. We have one amendment of which there have been consensus arrived at, and it's been there was a technical issue on an amendment previously posted with the reference to the days of notification, and it did not contain the intent, and we deleted that reference to that section, so everybody should have the revised amendment. Joe, you brought that, Michelle, you brought that around to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Chair, yes, sir. They should be in the members' packets.
It is substantially the same amendment we had before, minus the technical correction. With that, does everybody have the, well, make sure I've got it in my packet, Mr. Michelle. I had it at my desk in the other room.
Got the committee's schedule on top of the amendment. I think it's right to the left of your folder.
Thank you. In the reference to the amendment, it's 28-LS0021/R83-2913, and that amendment ends at line 18 under the correction. So, noting that, I will move that amendment. And
I'll object for discussion.
Hearing an objection, Mr. Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Michelle, staff to House Finance. The amendment before you is to draft version R of HB 4. With the chairman's pleasure, I'll just go right into it.
Yes.
On page 4, line 23, in regards to the governing body, following the word state on line 23, the following language is inserted. Except that the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Commissioner of Revenue may not be designated to serve on the board unless the project for which a license is issued under AS 43.90 has been abandoned or is no longer receiving the inducements in AS.90.110A, or the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Commissioner of Revenue are no longer signatories on a valid contract under AS 43.90. The next change is on page 12. Line 14, lines 14 through 20. The language has been deleted starting on line 14 on page 12. New language has been inserted stating, information and trade secrets of the corporation are confidential and not subject to AS.40.25 if the corporation determines that disclosure would cause commercial or competitive harm or damage to the corporation. Information that discloses the particulars of a business or the affairs of a private enterprise, investor, advisor, consultant, counsel, or manager that is developed or obtained by the corporation and related to the development, financing, construction, or operation of an in-state natural gas pipeline project by the corporation is confidential and not subject to AS 40.25. The next change is on page 38, line 29. And it's just a drafting correction. Insert the word and. Next on page 39, lines 4 through 6. We deleted and inserted order an expansion of an in-state natural gas pipeline or an open season under the terms provided for an expansion or open season in this chapter.
Representative Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, we actually deleted all of that language rather than adding it, and my understanding, if I'm correct, is that that's because that's already been added on page 38.
The chair, I apologize. Representative Holmes is correct.
I think, yeah, on page 38, lines 9 through 11 basically contain similar language, and it had also been added in the CS on page 39, lines 5 and 6, and my assumption is we're getting rid of the language on line 39 because it's sort of duplicative. Is that correct? I'm seeing nodding from the Department of Law.
Corey Mills, Legislative Liaison for Department of Law. That's correct. We felt like it was duplicative.
And we have Ms. Harris, if there are any questions for Department of Law online. I think Ms. Badger would probably yield to her on any, if we get much in deeper water. There's a nodding.
Yes. I have my lifelines.
Through the chair, continuing on, page 39, line 17, the number 90 has been deleted and 30 inserted. On page 43, the words "and approved" are removed, and instead the word "A," the letter "A" is inserted. And finally, on page 43, line 15, following "parties," the language has been inserted, "and the formation of the precedent agreement or related contract was not affected by unlawful market activity or unfair dealing as described in B1 of this section." And that is the summary of the changes.
Representative Guerra has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this, this goes to whoever can answer it. On the amendment allowing for an expansion of the gas pipeline, I just want to make sure there's no conflict with that and the requirements under AGIA that we, at least that exist right now, that we not exceed a half a BCF pipeline.
Corey Mills, Legislative Liaison, Department of Law. I do not believe so. I would recommend going to Bonnie Harris online, who actually helps advise AGIA.
Ms. Harris, could you provide any elaboration? Sorry, got your name wrong. That's you changed it, not me. Ms. Harris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Could you point me to the page for that so I can find it right away?
And Representative Guerra, you...
The page, Ms. Harris, is in the existing CS, is on page 38, lines 9 through 11, about the expansion of a pipeline.
Thank you, Mr. Guerra, through the chair. This language is intended to not to find a no-conflict or non-compete with... the terms of the Alaska Gas Inducement Act, referred to as AGIA, and it pretty much does that. There might be more specific language that would make it clearer, but short of that, this does express the intent that it not compete with the limitation in AGIA.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Garrett, did you have a follow-up?
I did have a follow-up, and it relates to just something that was brought up the other day that's partially reflected in one of these amendments. There was, through the chair, there was a discussion the other day, and I'm glad that we've extended the RCA review period to the 90 days, and then this 30-day extension on page 39. But there was a discussion the other day of what happens if one of the parties withholds information and therefore the RCA can't issue its decision in a timely manner. Is that in the statute book somewhere else outside of the CS, or is that language in the CS somewhere?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, I believe that's in 4205 in the CS, and I believe Stuart Gearing, who represents the RCA, is online and could address that question.
Mr. Gearing, do you wish to provide any elaboration?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. This is, for the record, Stuart Gehring, Assistant Attorney General in Anchorage. And although I represent the RCA, I am speaking on behalf of the Department of Law today. I think the information that Representative Guerra is looking for is that in 4205, 433, there is a ability for the Commission to extend time for review of what are called related contracts. If the party that submitted those related contracts has not furnished adequate information that's within their control. And also, there is a provision in the contract carriage certificate language in 4208.330, which provides, and that's in 330B, which is on page 44 of the CS, that allows the Commission to extend the period for review of the contract carriage certificate application for the duration of the delay caused by the failure of an applicant to provide additional information reasonably required by the Commission. So there are two provisions allow the Commission to extend time in the event that a party, as you refer to it, attempts to run out the clock.
Thank you. And actually, while I have you on page 44, under current law, there's a requirement that the RCA finds that a pipeline is in the public convenience and necessity. And I see that language. That language was not in the original bill, but I see that language on page 44, line 21. And I'm just reading as fast as I can, so I can't tell. Is that exemption still in this bill, or does there have to be a finding that the proposed? Oh, this is written in the negative. Does the language in the CS require an RCS finding that the pipeline is in the public convenience and necessity?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, yes. That finding is required for applicants other than AGDC. In the case of AGDC, AS 4208.020, which is on page 36 of the bill, or begins on page 36 of the bill, the CS, does make the legislative finding that if AGDC is the applicant, that the public convenience and necessity requires that pipeline. However, as to any other applicant other than AGDC, 4208.330 requires that the applicant demonstrate public convenience and necessity in order to get the certificate.
And just one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
And
let's say AGDC retains some role, but largely contracts with another company to build and operate the pipe. Which of these provisions would apply, the one that doesn't require the finding of public convenience and necessity, or the one that does require that finding?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, it would really depend on the exact structure of the business. If the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation is the applicant for the certificate, and they have hypothetically a contract to operate the pipeline, then the 020 provisions with the finding of public convenience and necessity already made would apply. However, if it's another entity, even if AGDC is an owner of that or a part owner of that entity, the 330 provisions would apply, and the application would have to include a showing of that the proposed service is in the public convenience and necessity.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mr. Chair, and I just it doesn't have to be right now. I just had one question that I could think of about the CS from yesterday, but whenever that's relevant.
Why don't you go ahead and ask it right now?
Thank you. And now I'm talking without the language in front of me, but my understanding is that if it's an AGDC pipeline, there are two possible sources of funds. One was the reserve fund, and one is bonding. And is my understanding of the CS correct that if they use money that's in the reserve fund, That money is not subject to the moral obligation of the state, but if they use bonding, then the state is on the hook in terms of pledging the moral obligation of the state. These are discussions that have happened in the hallway, so they're pretty far away from a real legal analysis, but I'm hoping somebody could explain those things to me.
Well, we can elaborate on that after the when we come back to that after the amendment.
After
we have the amendment on the table right now.
Oh, okay.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not a question, but I think I can shed further light on one of Representative Guerra's questions earlier about whether
and
not
I figured there was connectivity on so many of these issues. Yeah. We wanted to be fairly free-flowing and be able to ask questions.
This has nothing to do with the amendment, sorry.
No, and this one does have to do with the amendment. Mr. Chairman, if I may, earlier Representative Guerra was asking about whether this the language on page 38, lines 9 through 11, and it relates to the amendment because we took out similar language on the next page. But he asked whether that language was explicit about the RCA being able to order an expansion, whether that was constrained by any AGIA license. And the answer is absolutely yes, because any expansion would have to be in accordance either with this chapter, which is 4208, and 4208-300 explicitly limits any expansion that would be in conflict with AGIA, or under AS 3835-121A4 and AC, and 3835-121C explicitly limits any expansion by the terms of an AGIA license. So whether they were going to be working under either of those two sections, both are explicitly constrained by announcing a license. So the answer is yes.
Thanks.
Are there any other questions on the amendment? Do the sponsors did our best to work together. Are there any comments from the sponsor on the package? Okay. We did our best to try to work the consensus issues or the less controversial issues into this first amendment. There will be a few other issues that we'll bring back. So is objection maintained, Representative Holmes?
I remove my objection.
Are there any other objections to the amendment? So that is adopted. And other amendments, we kept the larger RCA issue for a more full committee discussion when we come back on Monday. I want all the members here, including my co-chair. There was a discussion of legislative approval, and I've talked to at least one of the sponsors. I'm in concurrence. I don't want legislative approval to be a hindrance or a handicap, and certainly my position that legislative approval should be only triggered by events and not just be an automatic event, and that would be the philosophy I would put forward, but I don't know what the majority will. There has been a lot of individual discussion that if there are specific things that would trigger, and I don't have all of those in mind, but that's if we had that type of any type of proposed amendment, it would hopefully be around specific things that we would seem to be, you know, constitutional legislative prerogatives, not just have a subsume that there is a requirement to come back and get in the middle of a private sector agreement. So I hope that provides some comfort to the sponsors in our discussion of that, but it's an issue that needs to be vetted in committee. So with those two, we won't have any other substantive committee action on the bill today, but those are the two issues that are in my mind, and there's issues from other members, you and maybe other absent members. So we'll have those for vetting and disposition one way or the other on Monday. While folks are here, I just take advantage of this time we have here. If you have any other questions about the project as members, and we'll open up that. While we have folks here, including the sponsors and AGGD staff and a whole slew of attorneys and administration staff. So, Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to have a discussion on the record on behalf of one of our colleagues who isn't able to be with us today. And I don't know if Mr. Dubler here is the correct person to have that conversation with. If not, maybe you can point us to somebody. But I promised one of our colleagues that I would flesh some stuff out on the record. And that has to do with legislative oversight and prerogatives of the assets of AGDC. And I guess I'll put out my understanding of how that works, and then hopefully you can help me tell me whether where I'm right and where I'm wrong. AGDC, under the version of the bill we have in front of us, would be basically a subsidiary of the state of Alaska. And therefore, you know, the assets of AGDC would be assets of the state. Now, what the state and this body in particular being the appropriating, the legislature being the appropriating body, we would, I guess the concern is what happens if AGDC goes through an open season, it's a failed open season, and then what do we do? And the question that I was asked to flesh out is what right does the legislature then have to come in, and does the legislature then own the assets of AGDC, and what can it do if we go through and there's a failed open season, and then do we have this entity out there that's kind of a rogue entity, or do we have some control?
The legislature or the state?
I don't want to own anything. You're right. Okay. I'm just saying as the appropriating body, but the state, Mr. Chairman. My understanding is obviously we are constrained by the U.S. Constitution by the you know, the contracts clause. So to the extent that there were some kind of bond out there, some kind of contracts out there, that the state would be constrained in what it could do there. But if it was an open season failed, we came back, there was still money in a fund owned by AGDC, there were assets owned by AGDC, that as an entity of the state could come back in and would have basically first right then to come in and control those assets.
Mr. Dubler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the Chair, Representative Holmes, that is exactly the case. The assets of AGDC, just like the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, are assets of the state of Alaska. They are, and that's why the boards are set up with typically with some commissioners and some public members usually, so that those assets can be managed in accordance with the state's desires, and you don't have rogue agencies off doing things with state assets. So to the extent that there was a failed open season, no project was built, all of the data that we've gathered, all of the you know, the GIS information, all of the designs, everything would be property of the state. And the state could, in the case of another third party that was attempting a project along the same corridor, that those assets would have a lot of value to those people to not have to go out and gather it themselves. So that those would be assets of the state. Of course, any funds available are state funds, and they would remain in or be transferred back to the state when the corporation was dissolved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a second sort of level of that, of course, is that AGDC would be governed by a board that would serve under the current version that we have in front of us at the would have two commissioners on it and would also be people who would serve at the pleasure of the governor, and so therefore I would assume that would be a second sort of check on that.
Through the Chair, Representative Holmes, that's exactly correct, and that would actually, I would think that's more of a primary control over that, because you typically can't dispose of things without board approval, especially big things.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I said, I just said that I would have that all fleshed out on the record, so I appreciate that.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. These are a couple questions I made up all by myself, so not asking on behalf of anybody. I mean, I agree with you that the funds that AGDC has are funds of the state, right? We've given them to you. What would happen... I mean, there's been discussion that if AGDC were to say, you know what, we've done a lot of preliminary work, we've done engineering, we've done right-of-way purchases, we've used a bunch of this $330 million to do that stuff, but now we're going to give all that stuff over to, I'm just going to pick a company, NSTAR. I don't mean that to say anything by that, but and at some point, I don't know if it was last year, somebody said, well, obviously we would try and sell that, not just give that, but is there any requirement in the bill that if we transferred basically all the state work product, let's say $300 million work product to a private entity, is there any requirement in the bill that we would get anything back for it?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, I don't recall there being anything in the bill that requires that. I do believe that the board would have a fiduciary responsibility to the state to safeguard the assets that are under their care, as would the senior management of the corporation as you know, fiduciaries of state assets. It's the same situation as Alaska Housing and ADA, for that matter, and any of the other state corporations. They typically don't just give things away. I mean, that's not how business is done, and that's a fiduciary responsibility of all of the people that control the corporations.
Okay. That's something I'll chomp over. As a legislator, I consider that the legislature's money at some point, but we can talk about that later. There's this whole issue that seems to come up, well, it's coming up on a lot of bills lately, about the moral obligation of the state. We're all way more educated on that than we were a while ago. Let's say AGDC tries to go ahead with this project and, issues a couple, $1 billion in bonds or $2 billion in bonds, and the project, for whatever reason, goes belly up. So another project comes along that's better, or there was just a miscalculation. If there's no ability to pay back those bonds because the pipeline never gets built, or it gets built but it never gets utilized, or part of it gets built and never gets utilized, I guess, are those bonds a moral obligation of the state to pay back? Not a legal obligation, but a moral obligation, so that if we don't pay those back and you don't pay those back, it affects our credit rating?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, no, they are not. Typically, in a construction financing like this, the construction period would be financed with different debt than the long-term bonds that you take out the construction loan with, similar to building a house. You don't get your 30-year loan when you buy the lot. You'll get a construction loan, you build the house with the proceeds of the construction loan, and then you get a long-term loan to take out your construction loan. The construction lenders in a project like this demand a much higher rate because they're taking completion risk for the exact scenario that you've pointed out. The project gets halfway done, gets three-quarters, maybe even gets all the way done, and it ends up not being used. The people that lent the money on the construction phase of that project end up taking the hit for that. They end up out the money, so that they demand a much higher return for construction type of funding than they do for long-term funding. Once the project is completed, once you've got gas in the line and your customers are paying, then you go for the long-term takeout of your construction loan, and you get a much more attractive rate because you've got a project that's proven and it's working. So they take their risk, and they're paid for taking that risk. But to be definitive, the state is not on the hook whatsoever for any of that.
Through the chair.
Representative Garrett.
What if it's AGDC financing? Is the state on the hook for that, at least under a moral obligation?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, no, it is not. And that is the purpose that the state, a lot of states, as a matter of fact, set up separate corporations for things like housing agencies, student loan corporations, so that the bonds that those entities issue, and the same isn't true in Alaska, the bonds that those entities issue are not general obligations or moral obligations unless the state chooses to have them be moral obligations of the related state. They're standalone corporations. AGDC would be a standalone corporation just like any other corporation in the state, so that the parent company, in this case the state of Alaska, is not responsible for the debt of the subsidiary.
And through the chair.
Jim Guerra.
I guess I'm comforted by that, but surprised by that. So is there, I guess, do our legal counsel agree with that? That, I mean, I understand it's not a legal obligation, right? That's not what a moral obligation is. A moral obligation is if you guys don't pay it back, then... well, we think you should have, and we knocked your credit rating down. So I guess I'd like to hear that from legal counsel.
Yeah, a whole bunch of lawyers were paying. Let's ask one or all of them, I guess.
Might as well get your dues worth, right? Corey Mills, Department of Law. This is an issue we have looked into, and that's, one of the reasons we were against the Capital Reserve Fund, the administration was, because that did create the moral obligation. But with the separate corporation, the way it's worded, it is, I agree with Joe Dugler of AGDC. And the only other recommendation is we do have Deputy Commissioner Rodell from the Department of Revenue who could also address the moral obligation as the fiduciary of the state on that issue.
Tim Gere.
Through the chair, I guess I can try and speak to you about that afterwards so I'm more comforted, but Could we get a letter from the Attorney General's office that the way this bill is written, that we're not pledging the moral obligation of the state if AGDC bonds? Just would that be a problem?
Through the chair, Representative Dara, I think we can get that to you.
Before Monday?
Before Monday.
To our committee here.
To Representative Stoltz. Thank you.
Representative Costello.
Through the chair, I guess I am asking a question on behalf of a good friend of mine, Bill Knoll, who was a member of the Alaska Ratepayers, who's no longer with us. And also there's a constituent of mine who was very involved in that group. And my question has to do with this project in relation to Susitna. And, you know, I know that Mr. Fowsky may have indicated at one point that there may be a relationship there and how one would affect the other. Can you comment on that?
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Costello, we view the project as complementary. The Susitna project, the hydro project, provides electricity for the rail belt and the Fairbanks area. I think Fairbanks is included in the rail belt, but I'll say just in case it's not. For both of those areas, all up and down the intertie, the natural gas that would be provided through this line is used to heat homes and used for a lot of things that electricity are not. In addition, we've got a schedule, and I'll provide it to your office. I don't have it on me right now, but in prior presentations, there's a schedule that shows that the amount of gas we're able to ship with the half a billion cubic foot limit actually doesn't meet all the demands beginning, I believe it's somewhere around 2025, which is right about the time that Susitna is projecting to come online. So that would actually take up some of the slack that this line would give up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I appreciate Representative Costello bringing that up. And one of my relatives is involved on the ratepayers group, which is a citizens group, which probably got the administration off dime. And Bill Knoll, similarly, and some of the other members who have been conflicted out of being involved through other employment now have put a lot of work into this project. And there were hopefully the it's been an evolving situation. At one point, I've had conversations with the late Bill Knoll and others about concerns that Mr. Fowsky and he's not here today and not able to communicate. So we'll hopefully just touch on that just to clarify it before we leave. But a need for this project to pencil out that they needed that gas supply to sell the utilities, and that was, if that's been a position that's evolved, then that's more comforting. Do you have any comment on that, Mr. Dubler?
Mr. Chairman, again, the projections we've seen on growth in the rail belt shows that there will still be a shortfall approximately 2025, somewhere in that range on total energy usage. And we think that the Susitna project, again, is complementary to this project.
It's picked up in the House Bill 4 has picked up another group of allies, and for totally unrelated reasons, and those who oppose Susitna, Watana, and you've got there's a big fan club of that and don't agree with their reasons, kill Susitna, and I don't think they care about any gas line or how much it costs, so I'm a little bit dismissive of that argument. But that's another group out here, and I think a lot of us have been getting correspondence, kill Susitna, Watana, build any gas line. So I understand their sentiment, and it's one more out of project opposition of one and not really a support of this, but you take your friends where you get them on an issue, and you don't get to choose your friends. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to help Mr. Dubler out. Fairbanks is part of the rail belt. We have been classified as Middle Earth many times, but we are part of the rail belt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that I included Fairbanks, and I wasn't positive of the definition of rail belt. So
I look at them at the sports conferences, too. So I'm not sure Anchorage is always included in the rail belt conference. That's the valley in Fairbanks, isn't it? And the peninsula.
We have railroads in my district, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. That's just if I can't deviate on sports for 30 seconds, it's an empty day for me. Any other questions while we have all these folks here today? Representative Guerra.
And then I'll take these reserve fund questions out of the room because I'm apparently the one that doesn't understand them. But is it the fact that without the reserve fund, AGDC can't bond? Or AGDC can still bond without a reserve fund?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I believe we'll still be able to bond without the reserve fund. But the reserve fund was another tool that we could utilize to, if in certain circumstances, a reserve fund that creates the moral obligation would can benefit a project greatly. We don't feel we're going to be in a position to need that. But again, if we are, we would come back to this body and approach them about using a reserve fund. A typical financing for something like this would be just straight revenue bonds, where again you've got customers on the one side that are your counterparties, and then you've got the issuer, and the customers are committing to shipping gas on the line, paying tariffs to ship the gas on the line, and those tariffs are utilized over the life of the bonds to pay back the bonds. So that's a very common structured finance transaction that are done. It's very similar to the way the housing bonds are done, the student loan bonds are done. You got a revenue stream from mortgage payments that you pledge to bondholders, and they're comfortable with that, and they'll lend you the money to do it. So this would be the same type of transaction.
Thanks.
Any other questions, Rudy? Before I ask the sponsors to see if they have anything they'd like us to consider or ponder as we make our final deliberations, I'd like to thank former Representative Cabina for providing the bagels this morning for the canceled meeting and the snacks that he brought as well that carried over to the afternoon. We had two cell phone violations in a period of days after having none all sessions, so good timing, Representative Cabina. Would you guys, Mike, would you like to say anything to take away? Or your call, I just wanted to...
We're in the bill. We're just looking for the meeting.
We are too.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committees, Representative Mike Hawker, District 27, co-sponsor of House Bill 4, along with Representative Mike Chenault. Just want to thank you for hearing the bill. Again, we are doing everything we can to work with the members of this committee. Appreciate the opportunity to work with you and looking forward to moving it out after we've resolved all your concerns and questions to make sure that to the committee's satisfaction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that's been our diligent effort, and things don't move as fast as we'd like either, Representative Hawker. So it's our fervent hope to have this available even for a late floor session. I think our speaker is very creative and can accommodate the schedule if necessary.
There's a big smile.
With that, no other questions. We will stand in adjournment. We'll see everybody Monday morning.
Stop.
Thank you.